from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Almost every time American arms go into action, the question is raised: should Congress be declaring war here? It's being raised again right now with President Obama's campaign against ISIS. It's war, say some, and Congress should vote on it. It's right there in the Constitution. But reality, say others, is that we fight without voting for war. What about this time, this hour on Point, war powers this president and the self-declared Islamic State? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do we need Congress to vote here, whether it wants to or not, on war? To debate this, to keep from going to war too easily, join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Here's the U.S. striking ISIS and more in Syria with this U.S. Tomahawk missile launch from the Arabian Gulf. And here's the president, September 10th, in an address to the nation, announcing a coalition to destroy ISIS, said he will not tolerate any threats to the United States.
Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
With us first today, a strong call for Congress to do its job here to vote on war. Bruce Ackerman joins me from Berlin, Germany, scholar of constitutional law, professor of law and political science at Yale University, a fellow at the American Academy in Berlin, author of We the People and the Failure of the Founding Fathers. His widely read piece on the president's war powers in the New York Times was headlined Obama's Betrayal of the Constitution. Bruce Ackerman, Professor Ackerman, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you say this marks a decisive break in the American constitutional tradition. Others say no, it doesn't. Make your case, Bruce.
Sure. At the end of the Vietnam War, Congress passed the War Powers Act of 1973 to set the terms under which the president and Congress could commit the country to new wars in the future. The act sets up a tight timetable. It gives the president the unilateral power to start a military campaign, but it requires him to gain the consent of Congress within 60 days. And if he fails, he has to terminate hostilities within 30 days. President Bush fully complied with the act. Both in 2001, he gained congressional consent to the war against al-Qaeda, and in 2002, to the war against Saddam. But President Obama is on the verge of violating it. On August 8th, he started the 60-day clock running by notifying Congress that he had begun bombing the Islamic State. This means that the time for gaining approval, as stated in the War Powers Act, expires tomorrow, October 7th. Nevertheless, he has not made any effort to comply with this deadline. He has merely asserted that the congressional resolutions of 2001 and 2, obtained by President Bush, are broad enough to cover this new war with the Islamic State. This claim has been roundly criticized not only by me, but leading scholars of all political persuasions. Nevertheless, the White House has failed to provide a serious legal opinion supporting President Obama's assertions. This silence, this failure to provide any reasoned support to the president's power grab, represents a fundamental violation of the rule of law. Congress has acted with equal irresponsibility. Rather than holding the president's feet to the fire, it has gone on a two-month recess to get votes before November 4th on Election Day without confronting its responsibility to hold an up or down vote on the president's new war. If nothing is done, we are confronting a looming constitutional crisis on November 6th, which marks the end of the 30-day termination period specified by the War Powers Act. If President Obama continues bombing beyond November 6th, that's 2 days after the election, he will be waging an illegal war and setting a terrible precedent, enabling future presidents to wage war unilaterally by claiming falsely that President Bush gained congressional authority in 2001 for an unending and worldwide war on terror in response to the tragedy of September 11th.
Bruce Ackerman, stand by. I've got questions there. I want to come back to that authority from 01, 02. First question, though, goes to the issue of war itself. Maybe this isn't war. Listen with us just for a second here. This goes again to the president on September 10th. He called this counterterrorism.
I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat. Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy.
Bruce Ackerman in Berlin, maybe this isn't war. This is counterterrorism, something different.
It is precisely to avoid these verbal problems that the Congress in 1973 used the word hostilities. That's a broad word, precisely to get out of these word games. The Act of 1973 represents Congress at its best. As you mentioned, the Constitution gives Congress the power to declare war. But Congress, understanding that we lived in a very different world from 1789, acting as it can under the necessary and proper clause of the Constitution, designed a sensible system for maintaining, permitting the president to move into hostilities rather than play war games, mm-hmm. and then get the consent of Congress. Rather than play word games about war, the word hostilities was intended to do to embrace just what the president is doing, bombing in a sustained way, without any expectation that this is going to be short. You see,
if the president, his associates are talking about years already, they're talking about
absolutely
years.
And that's precisely why Congress has an obligation under the War Powers Act to come in, define the objectives. What will it take to actually succeed in this war? This is an open-ended kind of conflict. The most sensible thing to do, you see, would be if they go forward. And you see, I'm talking here in my capacity as constitutional lawyer. That's mm-hmm. what I've devoted mm-hmm. my life to. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the merits of this war. Mm-hmm. Congress might decide, well, we'll give you authorization for a year. Quite a few senators have proposed that. But Congress has to get into the act, and it has to get into the act quickly.
What is the problem with the authorities that were granted to President Bush in 2001 and 2 that President Obama cites now as a foundation for his actions?
President Obama asserts he has not produced an opinion. His lawyers have not produced a serious opinion. Let me just give you one key fact. When President Bush went to Congress in 2001, and a few days after the tragedy in September 11th, to ask for its authorization, his initial request was to get congressional authorization not only for the against the folks who were responsible for the tragedy of September 11th, but, and I quote, really, to preempt any future strike. Even at this moment of crisis, Congress turned him down.
Mm-hmm.
If Congress had accepted that broad-ranging authorization, well, President Obama would be on, you know, plausible legal ground here. But they didn't. They only authorized hostilities against those groups and states that were responsible for 9/11, precisely for the reason that they wanted to have the president come back if he wants to expand the war on terror. This is precisely what's going on here. No one can pretend that the Islamic State has existed on September 11th, and it has been excommunicated and expelled by Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda, which, let me ask you this then, if I may. Your essay was in the New York Times. I'm also reading from the New York Times here. The United States has declared war only 5 times in its history, but has deployed military troops across its borders at least 125 times. Is that a reality check? Are you being a purist here that history says, come on, Professor Ackerman, that's just not the way it works?
This is why I'm emphasizing Congress's statute in 1973. Congress engaging in a genuinely, you know, we're talking about malfunctioning Congresses. Mm. This is an actual thoughtful constitutional responsibility. It was aware of many abuses. And it says, and it was particularly aware of the slippery slope that got us into Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And it crafted a solution. Moreover, it also crafted a solution to the problem that we right now have. It provided in Section 5A that if Congress were on recess during one of these critical times, 30% of the House and 30% of the Senate could write letters to their respective leaders of the House and Senate, who would then request the president to call a special session of Congress. Now, last week, on Wednesday, Nancy Pelosi said that there should be a special session of Congress, and she could, if she really took her word seriously, preempt and prevent the constitutional crisis that we're moving into.
Congress doesn't seem to want to vote on this, at least not before the midterm elections, if ever.
And
what does that matter?
Nancy Pelosi is a very effective person. Before they left, they authorized the president to start training moderate Syrian forces, basically in Saudi Arabia. The House voted 273 yes and 156 no on the ground that this was going down a slippery slope to authorizing military actions by the United States. 156 is more than 30% of Congress.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. An F-A-18 Hornet fighter jet there landing on the USS George H.W. Bush in the Arabian Gulf last month. Part of the campaign underway right now against the so-called the self-described Islamic State, or ISIS. We're talking this hour about war powers, the U.S. Constitution, this president, Obama, and ISIS, asking, does he need to go to Congress to declare war on the Islamic State? The president said he has the authority he needs.
I have the authority to address the threat from ISIL, but I believe we are strongest as a nation when the president and Congress work together. So I welcome congressional support for this effort in order to show the world that Americans are united in confronting this danger.
Welcomes congressional support, asked for it on a piece of this, training up rebels, but not more broadly. On CBS's Face the Nation last week, Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia said the president must seek authorization from Congress to carry out these airstrikes, this campaign.
He does not have the Article II constitutional authority to do this entire mission without Congress, and neither of the authorizations passed by Congress in 2001 or 2002 cover it. We should be debating and voting on this entire mission.
We'll hear in a moment from constitutional scholar Stephen Griffin in Louisiana, who says the president's on fine ground here. But Bruce Ackerman, professor of law, political science at Yale University, says no. And he's saying it quite loudly, saying this is betraying the U.S. Constitution. He joins us today from Berlin. Professor Ackerman, let me ask you why this is so important to you and what you wrote in your piece. You say the president seems grimly determined to practice what Mr. Bush's lawyers only preached. What are you saying there?
In 2001, right after the tragedy, we were operating in a panic and under emergency. President Bush, nonetheless, despite this emergency, did the right thing and went to Congress. Now, 12, 13 years later, we are no longer under conditions of emergency. President Obama has explicitly stated that there is no immediate threat from the Islamic State. This is, but if President Obama is allowed to proceed unchallenged, this will normalize the state of emergency and make it the new normal, a forever war dependent upon presidential decision, ignoring the considered judgment of Congress under the War Powers Act. President Obama is confirming and expanding the things that President Bush's lawyers only talked about. This is a tragedy, especially given the fact that he was elected and reelected to office, among other things, so as to pull back on all of this excessive executive claims of authority. It really is a tragedy. It's a very important moment in American constitutional history.
Bruce Ackerman, standby in Berlin. Corgi's calling from Springfield, Ohio. Corgi, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I want to respect the comments of this lawyer that you have as a speaker, but with all respect to him, this appears to be just an academic exercise of giving authority to the president through the Constitution or not. The fact of the matter is, President Obama is acting with or without the approval of Congress right now. So if this comes before the Congress through an actual vote, how does that change anything? If Congress is going to vote for going to war, he's still going to be doing the same things that he's doing now. And if Congress doesn't approve going to war, President Obama will still do the same actions that he's doing right now, with or without the authority or actions of Congress.
Corgi, I will put that to Bruce Ackerman. Let me ask you, you say an academic exercise, and I get that, but who knows how deep this is going to get? Who knows where this ends up? If American airmen's lives are lost and women, or arms and legs, or minds, it's going to cost our treasury. It's going to affect our position in the world, in this part of the world. I mean, it's not academic in its impact, Corgi.
Well, that's true. But I'm just saying, I'm saying strictly from the standpoint of giving authority to the president. It seems like he is already taking upon himself the authority of doing the necessary actions to create the outcomes that he wants.
We've got it. Let me take it to Bruce Ackerman. Bruce, what do you say? This is an academic exercise.
I respectfully disagree. If Nancy Pelosi were to organize 30% of the House and Senate to get a special session in the next 30 days, and they voted the war down, I do not believe that President Obama would continue. This would be a tremendous assertion and breach. I do not believe he would continue. It's even more likely that what would happen is that the Congress would limit the war, would pass something and say, well, in a year, you have to come back to us. Let's see what's going to happen. Is it sensible to continue down this path after a year? That kind of thing would be perfectly appropriate and has been proposed in the Senate and the House. So this is not an academic exercise. It is very difficult to believe that the president would simply, if Congress voted the war down, say, well, I'm doing it anyway. November 7th, there will be a lawsuit by soldiers who have personal standing to raise the question of whether they are fighting an illegal war. This will go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court right now has a case in which it has rejected the idea that it's a political question, the relationship between foreign affairs, the president's foreign affairs power, and Congress's statutes. And it's going to decide this term whether Congress can order the president to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. This, of course, is a much, much more fundamental and serious issue, and it is justified not under the vague power of Congress to intervene in foreign affairs, but under their power to declare war and to pass statutes in the 20th and 21st century that structure this power in a responsible way. So, it would be much better for Congress to have a special session now and actually debate and decide. And I would be shocked if the president of the United States, a constitutional lawyer, would then turn his back on what Congress did. But if he did, we would then go to court. And this would be a tragedy.
Bruce Ackerman, please stand by in Berlin. With us right now from Mandeville, Louisiana, Stephen M. Griffin, professor in constitutional law at the Tulane University Law School, author of Long Wars in the Constitution, American Constitutionalism, From Theory to Politics. Stephen Griffin, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. Bruce Ackerman is putting this in the most dire terms, in terms of this constitutional law scholar, President Obama, and his treatment of the Constitution. What do you see, Stephen, here? Do we have a constitutional crisis here or not?
Right. I share largely Bruce's respect that he's communicated with for the War Powers Act, but I don't think we face a constitutional crisis. In my book, I present a perspective which might encourage us to just sort of stand back, stand 100 yards back, and help explain why often people are so confused about these situations where we get strong assertions that the president does or does not have legal authority, but in the midst of an area of law that is not strongly governed by judicial precedent and occurs inevitably in a political context. Now, if President Obama had somehow disabled Congress from taking any action whatsoever in the future about the military actions he'd taken so far, I would share Bruce's concern. But obviously, that is not the case. The political situation is uncertain right now simply because of the elections. And the appropriate time, and Congress will have lots of time to take appropriate action without any worrying about deadlines passing, either in the lame duck session or, I think, more valuable, it would be more valuable for them to take action in the new session of Congress next year. But we have to understand we're in an area of law not strongly governed by judicial precedent, and we're also in an area where the two parties have fundamental disagreements. I do disagree strongly with Bruce that we have a legal continuity here such that even the Bush administration accepted a proposition that President Obama is not denying us. It's just not the case. President Bush's administration, like Republican administrations before him, always made clear that he was proceeding on the basis of Article II authority.
That is Commander-in-Chief authority.
That's right. It's Commander-in-Chief authority, along with other authorities as well, the power of the executive branch to lead in foreign affairs. That means the continuity that Bruce is at the heart of Bruce's argument doesn't really exist. You have Republican administrations contending, in fact, that the War Powers Resolution is unconstitutional. They've held that position pretty much consistently since 1983.
But it is the law of the land from 1973. You say there's no structure, but isn't that there's law sitting right there, whether or not courts have been heavily involved in interpreting it.
That's right. But if, relevantly, people, Republican members of Congress basically agree with that proposition, except perhaps when Democratic presidents are in power, then that tends to disable the resolution from having an effect on all military operations in the way that Bruce suggests. The War Powers Resolution has played a role in emphasizing the importance of these authorizations. And I don't think people, the American public, should get confused about the absence of declarations of war. These authorizations, like the 2001 and 021 that you referred to, are the legal and constitutional equivalent of declarations. They are not infirm in any way.
Are you suggesting then that the 01 and 02 authorities should apply here still, Stephen Griffin, despite the fact that they were about al-Qaeda and things that really are not the Islamic State?
What I'm trying to say is that the Obama administration, from the beginning, took a different position than the Bush administration. They took the position that they were not going to use or claim Article II authority. And that's exactly why Obama is making these somewhat strained arguments right now. He's trying to stay within the limits of the authorizations. Now, let's suppose you think that those arguments are completely out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Fine. It's up to Congress. Then that gives Congress the option of repealing and replacing them. Now, that is an option that President Obama has specifically conceded from the beginning of his presidency, but that option, that concession, was never made by any Republican president since roughly 1983. Now, in an area where we've got a fundamental disagreement with the parties, the onus is really on Congress. And I think the troublesome part to me of Bruce's position is when he starts saying that Congress has completely failed. Well, if you see Congress failing over and over again to do something that you think is absolutely necessary, I think we should be put to inquiry as to why maybe it's rational for them to act that way. Why are they acting that way?
A political interpretation of this circumstance, the Constitution, realities here. Bruce Ackerman, how do you respond? If Congress was head up about it, they could get involved. They're not, so there's a de facto kind of a consensus here.
President Obama is not challenging the constitutionality of the War Powers Resolution. He accepts it. The War Powers Resolution correctly puts the burden on the president to gain the consent of Congress. That's the law. There's nothing obscure about 60 days and 90 days and 30 days. This is, they wrote it in a very clear and structured way precisely to set out clear guidelines. The we can't pick and choose the law. When we say, oh, well, because Republican presidents, that is George Bush's lawyers said that the commander in chief could do everything. Therefore, President Obama, who is not saying that, should get off the hook somehow or other when he was elected to office, because precisely he didn't he was saying, I repudiate these excesses of the war on terror. This unilateral presidential authority. I'm sorry. The Congress of the United States in 1973 did something really responsible and set clear ground rules. The president of the United States at this present time is not saying that this is unconstitutional. He's saying it's constitutional. And then he's asserting some legal gimmick to get out of it, which is terribly implausible, so implausible that his lawyers for 59 days hasn't even done the American public the service of actually confronting the facts like those that I cited earlier.
Let's get a caller right here, if I may. Tavish I'll come to you, Professor Griffin. Tavish in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that I'm 26 years old, and the United States has actively been deploying troops in combat zones for 25 of the 26 years of my life, and I think that that's a very important sort of metric in order to gauge on going to war and deploying troops in active combat zones. And my question is to Bruce Ackerman, and that is regarding the action in Libya. Is this in the similar vein as the actions in Syria right now, given how long the air strikes were going on in there and that they exceeded the limitations?
Yes, thank you, Tavish. If I may, let me take it to Stephen Griffin first. Bruce, I'll bring it to you. Stephen Griffin, sure. What about the Libya precedent here?
Well, I don't think the Libya precedent is precedent for violating the War Powers Resolution. You know, somewhat like the Kosovo situation under President Clinton, the 60-day limit was exceeded by a few days. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe in either context the president had conceded that the specific 60-day limit was constitutional. But in any case, this indicates the largely political nature of these war powers controversies. If something had happened that was worse in Libya, if we had gotten involved, if we were still involved with troops on the ground, then I'm confident that the Congress would have addressed the situation through a separate resolution, and they should have done so. But we're getting off the track fundamentally if we get a little too obsessed with deadlines, as if we were talking about, say, a traffic violation, where there is a well-understood way of enforcing the law. You can expect deadlines and limits to be successfully observed. But in war powers, you don't have that structure. Now, another pillar of Bruce's position, you understand, is that the 01 and 02 authorizations are legally infirm, but you have to understand that Obama is not taking that position. Presidents are allowed to make, legal arguments, however strained, and that the fact that he's founding his arguments on the authorizations means, from his perspective, from Obama's perspective, he is not literally flouting the terms of the War Powers Resolution.
Stephen Griffin, please stand by there at Tulane University Law School. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about war powers, the U.S. Constitution, this President Obama, and ISIS, asking, does he need to go to Congress to declare war on the self-declared Islamic State? Stephen M. Griffin is with us, professor of constitutional law at the Tulane University Law School, joins us from Mandeville, Louisiana. Bruce Ackerman is here, professor of law, political science at Yale University, joins us today from Berlin in Germany. On August 7th, the president got all this started. He announced the authorization of military operations in Iraq against the Islamic group ISIS, or ISIL.
To stop the advance on our bill. I've directed our military to take targeted strikes against ISIL terrorist convoys should they move toward the city.
And it's more than targeted strikes around Erbil at this point. The same president in 2013 at the National Defense University, President Obama, authored that the 2001 Authorization for Use of Military Force passed after the 9/11 attacks to wage war against al-Qaeda and its affiliates had become obsolete and should be repealed, he then said.
Unless we discipline our thinking, our definitions, our actions, we may be drawn into more wars we don't need to fight. Or continue to grant presidents unbound powers more suited for traditional armed conflicts between nation states.
Kind of the argument that Bruce Ackerman is making today. Will Congress pick this up? Would they do something about it? Here's a September interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. Speaker of the House John Boehner said if the president requested new authorization, he'd bring it up before Congress.
The president hasn't done that. He believes he has authority under existing resolutions to do what he's doing.
You don't agree?
I think he does have the authority to do it. But the point I've been making is that this is a proposal that the Congress ought to consider.
Ought to consider, but you don't hear him really grabbing for it. Lots of response online. Joan says on Facebook, why is Congress hiding? Sally says Congress gave that power away when they voted unanimously to grant Bush the power to do what he saw fit in the so-called fight against terror. Rajesh says Congress may like it this way, saying they can denounce it if it goes bad, praise it if it goes well, ask what took him so long. Jim in Cleveland, Ohio. Jim, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay.
Just a couple of things. One is, I just think it's interesting this righteous indignation from the folks on the right when it comes to a Democratic president. I mean, Bush brought us to war on false pretenses. The WMD and his Office of Legal Counsel were constructing or playing fast and loose with pretty much every aspect of the Constitution. So that argument doesn't fly with me. The other thing is I find it interesting that we're also invoking 1973 Congress. Those were serious people. We don't have serious people in Washington anymore. So I don't support Obama's effort anywhere when it comes to military, but I do see his point, which is that you guys aren't working with me. You're just trying to, you want to take credit for the victory, but you wouldn't want to take any blame for the loss.
Do you worry about a precedent here, Jim? It's not as if there aren't others, but once again, American combat forces in hostilities from the air so far, and the president not going for an explicit full authorization, a fresh one.
I just don't understand. I just want to. I'll make this brief. I just don't understand how when we're talking about the Constitution, this concern, the crisis, constitutional crisis, when it's like the office of Addington, you, Fife, those guys, and Cheney, I can guarantee if Cheney got rejected for going to war, he would have gone anyway.
He would have gone. So why complain about it now? Jim, we've got that. We're going to go to Nancy Cordes with CBS News in Washington in just a moment to see what is being said among members of Congress. But one more call first. Frank in Austin, Texas. Frank, you're on the air.
Hello. I have Congress, if it doesn't like what the actually, I think what the president can do, he can do anything that he can get away with. But the Congress does have ways to respond, constitutional ways to respond. One of them is to cut off the money, the funds for the war, and they can do that quite easily, probably a one-line or two-line paragraph in the next funding resolution can say no more money. All right. And then the second thing they can do, if they don't like the way the president is conducting his affairs in office, is that they can impeach him. Now, I know that impeachment's kind of tough, but that those two measures are the constitutional measures that Congress has to respond.
Frank, we've got it, and I appreciate your call from Austin. I mean, in fact, there's more than that, because the Constitution is pretty clear on war. But Bruce, you know, you hear Frank in Austin saying, let's not get too hot and bothered. There are other things that can be done here. If they really don't like it, impeach him. Cut off funds.
Right. I want to make two points. First, I am not a right winger. I was the lead witness for President Clinton at the impeachment hearing in defense of President Clinton and the impeachment hearings.
Duly noted. Duly noted.
I was a representative of Al Gore before the Florida legislature in 2000. I am not, I am a constitutionalist. The Constitution does not say that the president can do whatever he can get away with. he has to gain the assent of Congress. That's what the Constitution says, and the War Powers Resolution implements the Constitution by setting clear guidelines. This is the law of the United States. The President of the United States has not even, you know, Speaker Boehner says, I'm convinced. He has no basis for being convinced. He has not, or his staff has not even received a serious set of legal arguments confronting, for example, my assertion, but it happens to be true, that Congress rejected the very authority of a general war on terror when President Bush asked for it after 2001. So this is the law. The President of the United States must take care that the laws be faithfully executed.
But Stephen Griffin is also a scholar of the Constitution, and he's looking at this and saying, look, politics come in here, and you can't, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he said, look, we're all right. We're in a decent zone. Then Americans get confused. Is he slacking on the law, or are you wound too tight on it?
Well, I think that we're disagreeing about the relationship between law and politics. For me, the Constitution structures our politics. The Constitution itself, especially in such a clear case as this, has to be respected. The founders were, this is what is happening now is precisely the runaway presidency that the founders thought they were going to try to get under control.
Stephen Griffin, and let me ask you then, what's the downside, Professor Griffin, of being a stickler for the Constitution here?
Well, I think it involves endorsing an unrealistic view of our situation that might prevent us from doing something more positive. Let's talk about the positive side.
Okay.
You know, the Congress here is the onus is on it. True, Obama could propose something, but Congress is perfectly capable of developing its own proposals, and it should do so. But you have to take account of some political realities. No action is going to happen now, and it wouldn't be a good idea. Congress is not in good shape to do what it does best, which is collective deliberation. It will be in a great position to do collective deliberation, not only on an authorization with respect to ISIS or whatever's going on in Syria or Iraq, but also possibly replacing the War Powers Resolution, something which has been advocated by really both people on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats. And there are a lot of proposals percolating now to do so. I don't necessarily endorse, you know, rushing to do that. But the point is, we have plenty of time to consider this situation. We shouldn't get ourselves occupied by deadlines that we think are rushing toward us when we've got a perfectly good, a decent amount of time for Congress to do a decent job on at least an authorization with respect to the current situation when the new Congress is finally seated in January.
Let me go to Nancy Cordes in Washington. She covers Congress for CBS News. Nancy, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure thing.
So is this, we've seen Tim Kaine, of the senator of Virginia, saying we must have congressional action here. But in general, I don't hear a lot of Congress people speaking up for this. Do they feel like they're shirking a responsibility? Are you hearing that the president is running away with the law, the Constitution?
No, and I think the main reason that you don't hear a lot of members talking about it is for the simple reason that they are not here. They are gone for a couple of months. They are distracted. They are campaigning. So, yes, there are some who feel very strongly about this, who are talking about it, but most of them, frankly, aren't. And that's why I think the White House sees that there's a tactical advantage to just waiting, a political advantage. Anything that the White House were to propose, if it had a mind to right now, would be used as election fodder. And Republicans who are eager to run against the president, he's unpopular in many states, would see this as one more, one more thing that they could campaign against. So there's no political advantage to the White House for bringing it up right now. Although I do think, when people say, oh, Congress just wants to run away from this issue, they don't want to debate it, I think that that's a little bit overstated. I mean, sure, there are some some members who feel like they could be put in a box if they vote for it and it doesn't go well. But as you saw with just this smaller issue of arming the Syrian rebels a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. when this did go before Congress, there was a very vigorous, serious, thoughtful debate about it. And there's no reason to think that if a War Powers Act was put before them in a couple of months and they had to debate that, I don't think you'd see people running away and running for the hills. They would have a very thoughtful debate about it then. Of course, that does tie the White House's hands a bit, because what members are going to want, if they're going to vote on this, they're going to want specifics. How long do you think that this effort is going to take? How much do you think it's going to cost? How many troops do you think we're going to have to dedicate? And these are questions to answers that the White House may just not have right now.
Rich in Trumbull, Connecticut. Rich, you're on the air.
Yes, just a little grist for the mill, Tom. Mm-hmm. If I understood it right, it was like a 90-day waiting period.
60 plus 30. Yeah.
60 plus 30, mm-hmm. okay. That's the Constitution was written at a time when there were no missiles and jet aircraft. Mm-hmm. There was cannon fodder and muzzle loaders. The Congress seems that it just wants to wait till after the election cycle, and then things will get supplanted in the news by a dozen other crises by the time the next election cycle is, and they'll be in again. So people really won't be able to say, you know, they won't. I think the American people will just, like, forget about what has transpired over this last several months.
Well, Tomahawk missiles much faster than congressional action, no doubt about that. But if it's still around, if it's around for years, we're looking at war powers, this president, and ISIS. Let me get one more right here, if I may. Rich, thanks for your call. Jose in Lubbock, Texas. Jose, you're on the air.
Yes, I was calling because I just wanted to give a comment. You know, I do believe that what he's doing is he's overstepping his boundaries as the president of the United States without getting Congress's okay. And I just believe that he's been doing this, and he's doing this because they've given him so much authority in the past that now he just feels like he has the right to do this. And I also feel if we pull back right now from anything that we're doing over there, we're going to be even more vulnerable to ISIS and to what's taking place over there. And I don't agree with him. I don't agree with almost everything that he does. But I do agree that we need to continue fighting for our country and for those people who are over there.
Jose, I appreciate your call as well very much from Lubbock. And let me get one more, and I'll bring it to our guest, Selah in Rochester, Vermont. Jose, thank you. Selah, you're on.
Hi, I'd just like to bring the discussion back to should we be over there or shouldn't we, you know, be waging foreign wars when really we need to get our own country back on its own two feet first. I mean, we have huge problems with homelessness, poverty, job outsourcing to other countries, and all that stuff needs, in, you know, vets, health care for the vets that have already fought in other wars that need to be taken care of first. Like, if it's a war on our border, yes, I think we need to defend our borders so that our country doesn't get invaded. But it's like saying, I'm going to borrow some money. We're also in debt. I'm going to borrow some money so I can buy a Mercedes when I can't even put food on my table.
Selah, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Stephen Griffin, these are the issues, are they not, that in the ideal constitutional world, Congress would be debating the very big issues, the threat issues, so that the voice of the American people through their representatives comes into what we're being told may be a years-long action, Professor Griffin.
Absolutely, and I am very heartened to hear what Nancy Cordes said is about members of Congress wanting to engage with this issue. It's just impossible right now, and we want Congress can do best, collective deliberation. You know, Bruce and I don't disagree. The Constitution absolutely does structure politics, but you can't expect the Constitution to work exactly the same in an area where you don't have constant judicial supervision like you do on issues of rights.
But we're going to war. I mean, we're making alliances here. We're agreeing to train people over periods of years. We're talking about a wide swath of geography.
Right. But is the president doing anything right now that is fundamentally going to bind the hands of Congress when they come back in January? As I see it, there's very little prospect that he can do that. And so matters will be still open from congressional consideration then.
Nancy Cordes, do you see or hear congressmen and women saying there's a problem here? Have we moved on to new turf? You know, a president will make war, do what he likes. We don't really want to vote. Do they want to get engaged in this?
I think they do. I think when it came up the first time, frankly, this issue came upon everyone so quickly that there were a lot of members of Congress who had to get educated. They were not, they didn't fully understand the ISIS threat. They wanted to understand all of our military options, the pros and cons of all of. So I think that, Congress having a little time to reflect is not necessarily a bad thing when they're weighing in on something that has a life and death implications.
Bruce Ackerman, we've just got half a minute here. You say November 7th there will be a lawsuit challenging the president's authority here. I think you said it will go to the Supreme Court. If that's true, do you think the court's going to want to take this up and bring some more judicial structure to these issues?
Well, it's hard reading tea leaves. But let's suppose that Nancy and Stephen's best case arises and that in the next year, Congress does set up a new resolution. And then 5 years later, the next president of the United States, using the same kind of spurious arguments, gets out of that resolution. We have to stand up for the rule of law now.
Bruce Ackerman. You're pretty loud and clear on that front, and we are grateful to you for raising it with us. Bruce Ackerman is professor of law and political science at Yale University, with us today from the American Academy in Berlin. Professor Ackerman, thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen M. Griffin, professor of constitutional law at Tulane University Law School, with us from Mandeville, Louisiana. Professor Griffin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Nancy Cordes, just love your reporting every time out, Nancy. You're great. Congressional correspondent for CBS News. Thanks a lot, Nancy.
Thanks, Tom, for having me.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. This is On Point.